Shop the Sherwin-Williams Winter Sale and get 30% off paints and stains January 9th through the 19th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Welcome back to The Pulse. Now, first story. Accra's most dangerous roads and intersections claimed dozens of lives in 2023, with Kwashimen La Paz corridor alone accounting for 29 fatalities, according to a new report analysing police crash data. Other high-risk areas include the Opebia intersection, La Paz, Aveno Junction and the motorway toll booth corridor. While the city recorded its lowest crash and death rate in 5 years, the report highlights troubling patterns such as higher crash frequencies on Thursdays and on Fridays, and severe accidents more likely between 6 p.m. and 8 p.m. Member of our research desk, Isaac Kofi Ejeh, joins us with more on that. Kofi, thank you for joining us. Just to think that we are recording rather lower numbers, there's something more to pay attention to in this report.
I mean, the good news is that if you look at this 1,398 crashes, this is actually the lowest we've seen possibly in the last 4 or 3 years. And this is good news. But the bad news is that we still have people dying on our roads. Out of this 1,000, almost 1,400 crashes, we had 88 precious lives that were lost actually in these crashes. Now, available data shows that each day you have about 6 Ghanaians who die, or 6 persons in Ghana die as a result of road traffic crashes. And this is something that we need to talk about. Now, you look at the good news is that if you look at this 1,400, this is a picture that I was talking about, that, I mean, accidents in the greater Accra region in the last maybe 5 years peaked in 2021, where we saw 1,000, almost 2,000 crashes in 2021. That was very significant. But we know that because of the campaigns we've had, Joy News, for instance, has done the road safety report, and we've done the drive safe campaigns, and we've seen the numbers going down. But in terms of the deaths, we're still hovering around significant numbers. And in fact, I don't really see why we should be struggling with road accidents at the moment, because the problem is clear that it's as a result of, most of the deaths are as a result of head-on collision. And okay, in fact, if you look at most of our major roads, in fact, the Kumasi, Accra Kumasi Road has not been dualized. It's not complete yet. And this is one of the roads that contributes significantly to the number of deaths from road traffic crashes. And we need to take a look at that. It's clear that head-on collision is number one. In terms of, I mean, the next slide, let's look at the next slide that talks about, you know, some other interesting trends of the deaths also on a decline.
Okay.
In fact, we've moved from as high as 136 persons dying in Accra alone to 88. So it means, okay, that the picture was bad and gloomy maybe about 2 or 4 or 3 years ago. And this is a significant improvement for us. But what you actually drew the attention of our listeners to, or our watchers to, is that the fact that you have some, you know, intersections in Accra that are more or less like death traps. Just down Kokomlemle, yes, Aveno Junction is one of them.
But the traffic light is always operational, quite always operational.
Yeah, I mean, but it's an intersection that's actually very busy. And if you lose concentration, you may actually crash into someone. They say, look, in road accidents, you may be following the rules and regulation, but there's actually someone who is also missing the rules and regulation, and that person can cause your death.
And so say that for that particular intersection,
yeah,
it's not a concern of how that intersection has been constructed at, yeah, all. You would say that it's a people problem.
Exactly. It's a people problem. I mean, it's about the traffic light, for instance. It's not all the time that is sometimes functional.
Okay.
I mean, on weekends, you see the major intersections, the Okponglo intersection, on weekends, you see people standing there with leaves, you know, trying to direct traffic. On weekends that people have closed from churches and all of that, that's also another death trap and something that we also have to talk about. In terms of the distribution, I don't know if I should say this is good or bad news, but for men, we die more than women in both the national picture and in the greater Accra region. Just look at the 88 people who died. 75 of them, more than about 90%, are actually male. I don't know if it's because male we commute more than female.
Well, maybe you're driving more.
We drive more, exactly. And in fact, in all road accidents, we die. Our numbers are, in terms of the death, the crash and everything, we our numbers are higher than that of the females. But what shocks me is the fact that if you have an accident in Accra, and you are more likely to have an accident in Accra if it is between 2 p.m. and 4 p.m. when you're driving, especially in these four intersections that we've spoken about, you're more likely to have an accident within this time frame, 2 to 4 p.m.
And if you have an accident... Why? I thought that's the time that the traffic is building, so there is this slang word, the go slow.
Exactly. I mean, the traffic subsides actually somewhere around maybe 1 p.m., 12 p.m. is a bit down, but from 2 p.m., 3 p.m., it starts building up. I mean, people start moving again. And between, let's say, 4 p.m. and 6 p.m., or 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., in fact, if you have an accident between 6 p.m. and 8 p.m. in Accra, you are likely to die. That's according to the data, that most of the deaths occurred between 6 and 8 p.m. That's the rush hour time that almost everybody is trying to get home. If you have an accident in Accra around that time, there's high probability that you will die within this time frame, because
I think you are more likely to die between 7:30, 7:45 to 8 p.m. because it's free.
Exactly.
The road is free and you can just, you know, drive as much speed as you want.
So, in fact, we were also looking at some other interesting data, and we saw that, I mean, there are more accidents during daytime than even during night. And it's shocking to have more accidents during the daytime, possibly because of what you're talking about, more cars during the day. People also drive recklessly in the night, though. But in terms of the numbers we've seen on a national scale, you are likely to have accidents in Ghana during the day than in the night. And in fact, you put it there, Thursdays and Fridays. In Accra, it's Thursdays and Fridays. But on a national scale, the probability of you having an accident and dying usually starts around Friday to Saturday, the national picture. And usually if you have it on the Accra Kumasi Road, it is usually between that time. You know, people move a lot between Accra and Kumasi because of funerals and other business activities. And if you have accidents around that time, you're also likely to die. And most of the accidents we have in the country occur between, maybe start from Thursday and around, Saturday is when they start peaking. But Sunday, maybe down to Tuesday, the numbers are a bit lower if you compare to other ones.
So for both Thursday and Friday, the crashes would happen as well as the death as well.
Exactly. I mean, these were the four intersections that we were talking about in Accra that are very, very deadly. Whenever you are actually using this intersection, you should actually be careful. You should know, you should pay attention to the road, traffic rules and regulation. In fact, your Pair Bia, which is the Liberation Road, is one of them. Out of the 88 lives that were lost in 2023 or in the period under review, 6 came from that spot alone. I mean, this is not just a number. These are human lives. If you look at our life expectancy, which is somewhat slightly above 60 years, if you should die in road accident, it doesn't care about your age. You can be 8, you can be 9, you can be a child, you can be a female, you can be a male, you can be a pastor, you can be anybody. If it happens to you, you will die.
But Opebia, though, Opebia, meaning that you're just driving from 37 and descending, or you're headed towards 37. And I'd say that it's fairly busy but not busy road. Usually the traffic will be quite stagnant over there, maybe because of that intersection. So what do you think is the intersection over there?
Whenever you have intersection, you should make sure that always and all the time you have functional traffic lights.
Right.
If the traffic lights fail, you possibly will have an accident. And these are all very busy intersections, and these are intersections that 24/7 traffic lights must be on and must work. I mean, they must work. If it fails, especially on weekends, that's when we have a number of the traffic lights in Accra not really functioning. You have people, you know, trying to salvage the situation using, leaves to direct cars and what have you. It's something that, I mean, it looks too...
But Kofi, again, La Paz is heavily populated and it's quite a busy road.
Yeah.
Neither do they drive any slower. And so I'm quite curious why it's recorded. And I'm not saying that I like the numbers over there. Yeah. But as compared to Opebia, it has my attention.
Yeah.
Again, because when people have free flow of road, then the speed or what?
I mean, in fact, Opebia is just an intersection. So the probability of having the accident at one spot is high. But with La Paz, you have a number of flyovers.
Okay.
So, I mean, you may have intersections and the flyovers complement the intersections. Okay. It may be one of the reasons why you may have lower numbers compared to Opebia or maybe the Aveno Junction. The Aveno Junction also has flyovers, I mean, footbridges across, you know, over the road or over the intersection. But it's still recording very high numbers. And you just look at it. The places where you have, flyovers and footbridges are the ones recording the very low numbers. And the ones that are flat with just intersections usually record very high numbers. Famous Okponglo is one of them. I mean, very notorious on weekends where traffic lights usually doesn't actually work on weekends. The Kwashiman is also one of them. The Hansonic, three people actually died, and Kwame Nkrumah Avenue, three people. And so these are very busy intersections in the capital, and it's sad that we are losing 88 precious lives to road accidents within this period under review MFA.
Well, Kofi, thank you. I'm just calculating the numbers in there, and anybody watching us just maybe reminds you of anybody numbers that you lost.
Yeah.
We're sorry for that. But still, on the road crashes, 20-year-old road crash victim Ethel Dankwa has been left with a dysfunctional right arm after a Kia truck ran her over while she stood by the roadside. She, however, has some hope that her dreams of becoming a caterer will come to pass. My colleague Adubia Sari interacted with her.
So, what were you doing before the accident? Can you tell us how it happened?
Okay, I was a shopkeeper. So that day, then I've closed from work. It was around 7:30 p.m. in the evening. I wasn't near the road. I was somewhere standing there. So, I didn't, man, say, as a cab, you feel a break. But when it was coming towards my direction, I didn't know. So, it can't bore two other people before I sent a baby me. And see, maybe when I imagine now, it dragged me, it make it to the other side. And see, many by my house, let me walk on. I see. I tie in the cement, I know so. And see, those around at the moment, and they're not moving to me. See, Ubia drink or Nipa to Neddy can't bore monoso. See, actually, no more taste and maintain more carnassina on my left take car on pyjama. And see, on we men, I'm in sano a boo, and a skin a free home. And now only the men sano a nam no quana womb. Yeah, blood. No, me who can, but those around the necessary.
We apologize sincerely for that sound quality. We definitely will bring you that story in our subsequent bulletins. But let's bring you some election-related stories. The presidential candidate of the New Patriotic Party, Dr. Mahamudu Bawumia, has ended his 15-day campaign tour of the Ashanti region, where he interacted with thousands of supporters, traditional leaders, and other interest groups. The tour, which began on November 4, saw Dr. Bawumia visit over 40 constituencies in the region, where he outlined his vision for Ghana's development and listened to concerns of the people. Although he has been through all 16 regions, the vice president is expected to head to his home region and will also revisit some hotspot constituencies in Ashanti, Easting, and a few other regions before December 7 general elections. My colleague Nana Bwachi Yadom has a wrap from the vice president's campaign in the Ashanti region.
It's been 15 days of intense campaign in the Ashanti region. That has been the routine of the MPP's presidential candidate, Dr. Mahmudu Bawumia, crisscrossing various constituencies in the Ashanti region. But then, the vice president's campaign in the Ashanti region finally comes to an end in the Ahafuanu Southeast constituency. He has toured all the 47 constituencies in the Ashanti region, sharing what he describes as the bold solutions for Ghana's future. The MPP's presidential candidate has been doing this alongside the Ashanti Regional Campaign Manager for the NPP's campaign, the regional chairman as well, Bernard Entribosiako, popularly known as Chairman Wontumi, with some other party figures, including the former majority leader Osei Chairman Sabonsu, the Member of Parliament for Domiko Abrenya, Ajua Safu, Pabna Ejie Japon, the former secretary of the MPP, among others. They have been crisscrossing various constituencies in the Ashanti region, with thousands of people coming out in their numbers to listen to the message of the Vice President, Dr. Mahmudu Bawumia.
One of the key things I made as president, as the legacy of the railway system, yet the rail, no, every Accra Tema to Kumasi all the way to Paga. That is the central line, from Accra to Paga. Yet from Kumasi to Eko Takrade, then we are taking it from Ejisu to Eduadei, and then we are taking it from Awasu through Nyinahene to Eduadei. Sa rail noa yedi bano edi ejuma bebre ebebre yememuno ejuma bebre na yedi ba. We are going to use local materials. The railway is transformational. Yebechengi niema bebre na mpuntu bebre so abagana in every sector of the economy. Yaya asino, we have created more jobs. We have built more roads. We have built more railways. We have built more interchanges. We have built more hospitals. We have built more schools. We have built more sports facilities. We have built more libraries. We have built more airports. We have built more sanitation facilities. We have built more courts. We have done more jungle development. We have done gold for oil. We have done digitalization. Every sector of the economy, agriculture, industry, services, we have done more than you.
As the countdown continues, the vice president and presidential candidate for the New Patriotic Party, Dr. Mahmudu Bawumia, continues to demand for a debate between himself and the NDC's presidential candidate, John Mahama. Well, it looks like the vice president is ending his tour in the Ashanti region on a very good note. That is him dancing to Kimpalute's Aseda. The vice president, Dr. Mahmudu Bawumia, with the parliamentary candidate for the Ahafuanu Southeast constituency over there, displaying his dancing skills to Kimpalute's Aseda song. That seems to be the very favorite song of the MPP's presidential candidate, Dr. Mahmudu Bawumia. For Anthony Abeifakabo, former member of parliament for the Lora constituency, the road hasn't been cleared yet. It is time for the vice president to hit the streets again, go into some hotspot constituencies to share his message to the people.
But we're going to head back to the north. We're going to head back to the north to finish up some of the constituencies, and we're going to be going around the country again. We're going to be running through the country once more, and we're not done until we're done.
The vice president is not done with his tour so far.
We're not done with our tour at all. We are in it till the last day. You know, that is the type of energy, that's the type of drive that the candidate has garnered. it, and all of us on the team, like you've seen in the bus, we're all ready for the roller coaster.
The vice president, after ending his tour in the Ashanti region, is expected to kickstart his campaign again in the northern region. In the Ashanti region, his wife, Samira Baomia, is expected to be here. The MPP's vice presidential candidate, Dr. Matthew Poko Prempe, is also expected to be in the Ashanti region. But guess what? With some few days to the election, the president himself, President Akufo-Addo, is also expected to be in the Ashanti region. Not forgetting that the NDC's presidential candidate, John Mahama, will also be in the Ashanti region, making the region a very competitive place for the December 7th presidential and parliamentary election. For Joy News, my name is Anna Bwachi Dankwa-Yadom. Kumasi.
Still on elections, NDC presidential candidate John Mahama has reiterated his comments suggesting that the seat of government, Jubilee House, is a hub for the creation of fake news after Chief of Akroso expressed concerns that his words had been misrepresented to suggest that he had endorsed a different flag bearer who had visited him. During John Mahama's tour of the Eastern Region, the Chief of Akroso, Nana Kwabena Ofori II, during his speech, cautioned journalists about misrepresenting his words. Maxwell Agbagba has more in this report.
The NDC presidential candidate continued his campaign tour with visits to 7 constituencies on the second day, delivering key messages to the electorate. Among his promises were plans to implement a 24-hour economy, improve the free SHS policy and develop better roads, and many others. Former Eastern Regional Minister under the John Mahama administration, Mavis Amafrimpong, expressed optimism that the region is gradually shifting towards the NDC.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Winter Sale and get 30% off paints and stains January 9th through the 19th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Story has changed. There is a changing wave. We started from Adwajiri and Sanwam constituency. You could see the changes and the signs at Abuakwa South yesterday. You saw even Chebitan behind the palace, the way the people welcomed President John Dramani Mahama. Everything shows that indeed the people, though they have voted for MPP for a number of years, they've seen that they cannot continue to follow MPP because at the end of the day, they have nothing to show for their own party that they voted for. So everyone is changing.
At a mini deba held at Akroso, the chief, Nana Kwabena Ofori, took a moment to address concerns about media representation. The other day, there was a delegation here, and what I said was misrepresented. Journalists, I beg you, report exactly what I say. They claimed I said that if one of the flag bearers does not become president, the country will collapse. I've never said that, and I will never say such a thing. They did the same thing to Siudin Kitia. So I beg you, just report what I say so that I can face the consequences squarely if necessary.
John
Mahama has done before. We know what he accomplished in 4 years. You are hated if you speak the truth, but I will speak the truth and be hated. The city was stable in the past, but now it's 16 cities to a dollar. And you say we shouldn't talk about it? Which one was better? The economy is bad and we need someone who can fix it so we can be better off. We are all suffering. We pray that he will win and come to help us.
Sir, you are a brand new son. Now you are going to be a king. In his address, John Mahama came to the defense of the media, attributing the spread of fake news to the Jubilee House. He criticized the current administration, describing the presidency as a hub for misinformation.
Nana Kasano, Okase Kasa Okano, and Central for Enshedo, Omonkani Ye, Namomokodanina no. Nana Yen Central for no. A Jubilee House for Flagstaff House.
He said, Nana was questioning the journalist. Nana, it's not a journalist. It is the Jubilee House, the Flagstaff House. It is called fake news. That is the hub. What you have not said, they will claim you said. If the seat of government becomes a fake news hub, it is not good. So, Nana, you are not the only victim. They have done it to me and many others.
Fake news thing na yet who on social media so a yomwa na ye.
Still on the NDC, the running mate of the National Democratic Congress, Professor Nana Jainapu Kwajiman, has criticized the NPP for prioritizing development in areas perceived as their strongholds. Speaking during a courtesy call on the Wala overlord, Nafu Seni Seidu Pelpo, Prof. Opoku Ajiman said the NDC ensures equal development across the country, regardless of voting patterns. She noted that some parliamentarians outside the NPP are being sidelined in development projects, but assured that the NDC will not back down from pursuing the people's agenda. Professor Jainana is touring the Upper West region, and Rafiq Salam reports from Wa.
Professor Jane Opoku Ajiman was accompanied on the tour by some stalwarts of the party, including former Health Minister Alex Sebefia. The NDC running mate then rolled out of the Wa airport and headed to the One House Palace, where she paid a courteous call on the overlord of the Wala traditional area, Nafu Seni Seidu Pelpo IV. Spokesperson of the Wala overlord, Jimpen Nakadir Ibrahim, recalled some few requests that they penciled for John Dramani Mahama on his recent visit to the palace.
To his surprise, just a few weeks ago, he learned that a number of districts and municipalities in the country had benefited or had to benefit from the elevations to different statuses, much to the neglect of the one municipality. And His Majesty says that a future NDC government should consider doing this for us as one of the first things that you will do, even if on the 8th of January 2025, he wakes up to the news that the one municipality is elevated to the metropolitan status.
Coupled with the NDC's track record and good policies on their manifesto, the party will return to power.
And that is that unlike the NDC that takes care of everybody, our opponents don't necessarily do so. They have already told us about people who don't vote for them and for which reason they don't pay attention to them. So what this means is that our PCs have suffered for 8 years. It means that whatever they could have done has been denied them because they voted for the NDC. This will not stop any of them or any of us from voting for a government that brings interventions such as the road you have requested for everybody's benefit.
Some supporters of the NDC asserted that due to the failed promises of the MPP, coupled with the NDC's track record and good policies on their manifesto, the party will return to power.
You see, the current hardship in the country is mouth-watering. Things prices are skyrocketing, so the good people of Upper West are very convinced that His Excellency John Dramani Mahama with the MP of West Central and the 11 constituency, we are going to win them hands down.
Reporting for Joy News, Rafiq Salam.
A group of public lecturers in the Volta region have endorsed the bid of John Dramani Mahama to be given the mandate to lead the country for a second time. According to them, he is the only presidential candidate who can fix the country's economic education sector, among others. They were speaking to the media after embarking on a campaign spree for the National Democratic Congress presidential candidate at the whole central market.
Some lecturers took to the street of Ho and the whole central market in the Volta region to convert vote for the presidential candidate of the NDC, John Dramani Mahama. The group was made up of lecturers from the Ho Technical University and the University of Health and Allied Sciences. They believe John Mahama's educational policy are the best to help produce the right human resources for the country.
Because as people in academia, we have seen that there is a flop in our educational system. And so to correct it, we need to come together and let people be aware that we at the tertiary level are receiving the goods that are being brought from SHS. And we want to end it. We are not going to cancel free SHS. So do not be afraid as a parent to vote for us. All we need to do is that we want to restructure. We can only end this confusion in our educational sector by voting for JM. She's a mother.
We've seen that at this point in time, what we need is a man of integrity. What we need is a man of trust, a man of his own words, and a man who has the people at heart. That is why we are out here. We lecturers will not come out and support a community that has even disappointed himself. It will never happen today, it will happen tomorrow. We've tried him, we've tested him, and we realize that no, he is beyond the word trust. He comes nowhere near. The change we are yearning for is here with us, and that change is John Dramani Mahama and all the NDC parliamentary candidates in the whole of the Volta region and Ghana at large. And of course, the media must also join this fight.
Some indicated that the current state of the economy informed their decision to support John Mahama, considering his proposed economic policies.
This one tuber of yam is 50 cedis. How do you survive as a lecturer? How much are you earning? How much do you buy in the market? At the macroeconomic indicators, the exchange rate, the Ghana cedi against the dollar. Are you happy with it? No, we are not happy. The cedi is just soaring like eagle in the sky against the dollar. That is why we are on the street today, campaigning vigorously for JM and Nana Jane and the NDC fraternity. That come December 7th, we have to do the needful by voting them and restoring the economy.
Fred Kwame Asari, Joy News, Ho.
The National Commission for Civic Education, NCCE, is warning of the dangers of increasing monetization and vote buying ahead of the 2024 elections. According to the chairperson of the commission, Kathleen Adi, vote buying has dire consequences on the democracy and development of the country's post-election, as politicians will have to recoup money spent on elections. She spoke in a press briefing to give updates on the commission's activities ahead of the elections.
We've talked about money in politics, and the thrust of our argument when we engage people on this topic is that everybody should pause and ask themselves a couple of questions. The first one being, where is the money coming from? The fact that somebody is sharing money, the first reaction should not be gleefully going to get your share. We should ask ourselves as citizens that where is the money from? Because again, I have repeated so many times over the course of this year and even last year that there is no free money anywhere. Wherever the money is coming from, it's going to go back with interest. And ultimately, we the citizens will pay the bitter price in the form of truncated development. Because if we elect people who have gone and acquired debt to come and share the money for us so that they win the election, once they win, their focus will not be on the mandate, their focus will not be on doing what they are supposed to do for the people, their focus will be on going out there to find a way to recoup the money, go and pay back wherever they got it from, and then going to get more money for the next round. And so it works against our interest to continue to support this culture of money sharing and monetization in political campaigns and elections. Secondly, I always also say that there's no free money anywhere, which is true, but there's a lot of bad money available for those who want to make use of it. And again, if you think that somebody going to get bad money or dark money from some place and coming to share is none of your business, you have to think about where that money also comes from. It comes from possibly drug dealing, human trafficking, organ trafficking, gun running, and all these negative things that we don't want to have any involvement with in our society. If politicians go and take this money and come and share it here, that means that as a country, we now have a relationship with people who are participating in organized crime. And the consequences for that are also dire. So please, let's be mindful of all the money sharing that is going on. If you say, well, I'm just taking my share, it's not a big deal. Remember, that is, if everybody takes their share, it becomes a very big deal because then it amounts to a lot of money. Research indicates that for parliamentary primaries, and candidates need to raise $200,000 to $250,000 minimum to be able to execute successfully a parliamentary primary. And most of that money is just money that is being shared to citizens. So we have a role to play in this issue to ensure that that culture is expunged from our political culture and that we rather build strong democratic roots and set rigorous criteria for those who seek power so that when they come, they will be able to deliver for us.
The commission is also charging political parties to impress upon their parliamentary candidates to make themselves available for policy dialogues to promote issues-based campaigns.
Important impact of the parliamentary dialogues is in the way they make democracy, is in the way they demonstrate democracy in action, where communities gather to interact directly with those who offer to represent them. They see contestants sharing a platform, sitting next to each other, being cordial, speaking in terms with no insults, no intemperate language, and no threats of violence. The dialogues demonstrate the core principle of contest of ideas that underpin true democracy. It is so important that citizens, especially young people, witness this to reinforce the understanding that the negative elements like insults and violence have no place in a democracy. Regrettably, some parliamentary candidates of the major political parties have refused to participate in the dialogues, citing a plethora of excuses, and this is unfortunate. The NCCE is urging all political parties to ensure that their parliamentary candidates actively participate in the dialogues. It is also an opportunity to highlight the policies of the parties. The dialogues provide a crucial platform for candidates to engage directly with their constituents, addressing key issues and indicating priorities. We reiterate the call on all political parties to demonstrate their commitment to deepening Ghana's democracy by ensuring that their candidates freely engage in these debates, which serve as a vital tool for encouraging political dialogue, civic engagement, and the peaceful conduct of elections.
You're watching The Pulse. We'll go for a quick break. We'll be back shortly. Welcome back to The Pulse. And now, an international lawyer and a staunch advocate for democratic principles, Andrew Appiah-Dankwa, has expressed a deep concern over Russia's expanding influence in Africa. In a new epistle published on My Joy Online, he warns that while Moscow's involvement in Africa is often presented as mutually beneficial, offering financial aid, security, and development support, the cost to the continent's democratic fabric is alarming. With Ghana heading to the polls in just 2.5 weeks, what does this mean for the elections and governance after the vote? Joining us in studio is Andrew Appiah-Dankwa himself. Thank you for joining us.
Always a pleasure.
Right, so the closest we've come as a country to Russia would be when our economy was quite depleted, and you hear it in a lot of the government's speeches that it's because of the Russia-Ukraine war and all of that. But why would Africa generally would be concerned about a certain relationship between Russia and us?
Well, so let me take this opportunity to wish your lovely viewers a good afternoon or evening. I think a casual look at our history, Ugandan history, at African history, at world history, and our journey through democracy and why democracy, especially in the last 4 years, seems to be failing in a part of the region, will cause you to find the problems within the context of the geopolitics. When I say geopolitics, I think it is necessary for us to cast our minds back to issues after the Second World War.
Okay.
After the Second World War, there was a huge, what's called East-West, more or less, what we would term the Cold War. You know that based on that, Ghana took a position which is meant to be non-aligned. As Nkrumah famously said, we do not look to the East, we do not look to the West, we look
forward,
straight.
Yeah.
So for large portions of the first 30 years after the deep colonization exercise in Africa, Africa found itself in the middle of the Cold War, and most of the civil wars that were fought around that time was really a proxy war between the West, led by the US, and the East, at that time led by the USSR. Okay. Now, you know, in 1990, the USSR more or less died, and the Cold War is said to have come to an end at that time. Now, issues that have arisen up concerning the issues in the Sahel regions, the infiltration of Wagner, you understand, the coup d'etat in Mali, in Burkina Faso, in Guinea, the perceived unrest, or some people would want to call it a civil war, in the CAR, in the Central African Republic, issues in Algeria, the unrest in Algeria between Algeria and France, and then the rule Russia indirectly or directly has played, because as in the Sahel areas, we all know of Wagner and the influence Wagner has played. Indeed, there are reports that suggest that close to gold worth up to the tune of $2.5 billion have been taken from these regions to aid in Russia's war efforts with Ukraine.
And this gold would be that it's from different African countries that produce gold, or
the war in Sudan,
from a specific.
The war in Sudan is really a war for who controls their natural resources. Talk about Mali, you talk about even the CAR, the Central African Republic, and there's always a linkage. Now, my view is that, see, the war for the struggle of Africa right now has taken a new form, and that form is not to use guns and weapons and per se, but in the use of media through disinformation and misinformation to direct narrative towards their broader geopolitical agenda. So then the issue will be, what's Russia's broader geopolitical agenda insofar as Africa and Ghana is concerned? You know, earlier I spoke about the Cold War.
Let's even come back to the media. Are you referring to the entire media landscape, or particularly social media? Because I would have thought that as a country, we have quite some absolute control over our media.
Not necessarily. So, indeed, experiences in some areas in Africa, like in Cameroon, in Algeria, in Mali, it tells us that Russia has managed to use mainstream media, like Sputnik, like RT, like Media Freak, to as channels to disseminate what's called their propaganda towards their broader geographical, their geopolitical agenda. So then what this tells me is that we need to understand the geopolitics of the East and the West to understand the dangers of certain information which will aid them in that the agenda, and how that will benefit or hurt us as Africans,
okay,
specifically as Ghanaians.
Okay.
So essentially, what is Russia's geopolitical agenda? And their number one geopolitical agenda is to challenge the influence, the impact, the power of the West. You understand? Then the question also becomes, what is the geopolitical agenda of the West? Now, we all know that the West, since after the Second World War that was led by the U.S., have been pushing a geopolitical agenda of good governance, democracy, rule of law, and all. You understand? So that any agenda that purports to fight that agenda, you understand? Because we need to understand that a system that purports to guarantee us the rule of law is the only system that can guarantee us of our God-given rights, as our right to life, our right to our liberties, and our right to pursue our own happiness. So any agenda that seeks to undermine those values essentially is undermining the values of democracy, of constitutional democracy, and it portends great danger for all of us.
And so you say that for the West, generally led by the U.S., who would champion laws like human rights, which will then decentralize to us as Africans and even will matter to us as Ghana, countries like Russia would play the geopolitics through them before it gets to Africa. Because then if they attack that very fabric of how the law, the rule of law is, specifically for the West, then I want to see how that will then affect us quite directly.
Okay, so essentially you want to find out how their misinformation or disinformation affects democracy.
Yes.
Okay, so you take what's called, even in Ghana here, you hear people who claim to be proponents of the East keep on talking about neocolonialism, about how the West is through the economic policies impoverishing us. Indeed, in fact, claims have been made that certain coup d'etats have been led through efforts of the West. Now, what I'm saying is that the purpose for those propaganda, you understand, is to enhance or put them in the position where they can challenge the West in terms of their geopolitics, in terms of the partnerships they forged with African countries, in terms of and even disrupt those partnerships. But the bottom line is, how do you have access to the resources, the wide resources of Africa? I'm not saying that is also not the agenda of the West, but whereas the West will push an agenda of good governance, an agenda that guarantees the rule of law, an agenda that prohibits corruption, you understand? Mm-hmm. To more or less create that right environment for their business interests to then tap into the resources here to the mutual benefit of all of us. Based on how issues have been handled in Mali, in Guinea, and in fact, in a long history with Russia, my view is that they use propaganda to push a narrative that whittles down on the Western geopolitical ideals. And I'm saying the ideals being good governance, rule of law, and they surreptitiously find a way of promoting agendas that ultimately will lead to authoritarian and dictatorships, you understand?
Okay.
And then I think the evidence are there to see. I can mention what's happening in the Sahel regions, the infiltration of Wagner, the unalloyed access to...
When they infiltrate, do they take rent? Do they take rent of the place to be able to control the resources, to be able to push the agenda?
Because essentially, they control the governments, essentially. And because, and you see, for you to have that's the kind of unfettered access to all the resources, then you need an authoritarian regime. Yes, and that's the agenda. Yes, and I can see the examples are there for all of us to see. You can mention the issue in Sudan. You can mention Niger. You can mention Central African Republic. You can mention Mali and all. So even though because of that propaganda, they may doesn't an alignment with them may look very enticing, the long-term impact goes to the very foundation of why democracy and the rule of law can't be.
As you have said, the options that are thrown to us as Africans is enticing. And
initially.
Okay, but do we not need this? Do we not need whatever it is that they throw to us?
See, we need long-term solutions to our problems. Yes, even with the democracy, my personal view is that it is under threat here, and we are vulnerable, and that's why they will target us, not just because we only have the resources, because we fail to entrench democratic values in our system.
Explain further what democratic values would be. For example, December 7, it looks like we're going to, it's not that it looks like, we're having our elections on December 7th, and that is a great milestone of democracy. We have followed the Electoral Commission, we have followed electoral campaigns and all of that. If you cast your mind across, between now and 7th, and even after December 7th, what possible thing do you think they may have indirectly thrown to Africa that may have come into Ghana, that is laying carpet? We may not see it now, but it's probably laid carpet, and we may have the effect of it a bit later.
Yes, so specifically with Ghana, as an I'll obviously struggle to give you a specific
example. It will not be.
However, like, and I think I've said it on your, as an, on your platform before, our democratic culture, you understand, in my view, is not participatory enough to withstand any aggressive dissemination or disinformation, what's called agenda. Because the political culture here is very parochial in nature. The media ecosystem is not, in my view, strong enough to withstand a barrage of disinformation. As in, do we have a system of fact-checking which is easily available and accessible to everybody? Because, unfortunately, because of even the parochial nature or culture that we've unfortunately built in our country, what fuels media education? You understand? Political education. We are going into an election. Clearly, when you listen to majority of them, you know where they stand. It's essentially, what I'm saying is that, as the people, and it's not just the media, I think the number one blame has to be placed on the political institutions. When I say political institution here, the state itself.
Yes. Okay.
Because leadership...
Why aren't you describing it as the state of the government institutions and rather the political institutions?
No, because it's not all political institutions that can be defined as being the state. So
okay.
One of the very critical political institutions is the political party, but they are not state. They are not government. The media houses, in the creation of the right political culture effort, is a very formidable political institution. You understand? That has a role, but they are also not state. Now, but that effort has to be led deliberately by the government. Yeah. Because you are there to grant leadership to a certain end, not just an economic end, but also a political end, and that political end means that there's an obligation on you to foist or to lead an effort to create that right political culture that is participatory as against parochial. Yeah. You understand? And one powerful tool is directing public opinion, directing public discourse towards that end. Now, if we manage to create that right political culture, which is participatory, you can't do that if your citizens are not informed.
Right.
Yeah, you understand? Then efforts by these anti-democratic institutions or countries or agencies or agendas has a chance. And we shouldn't think that Ghana is insulated. You understand? And that's why I felt the need to prompt us. That yes, we may have had our democracy for a generation, but in terms of the values, the principles, in my view, they are being whittled down.
So you'd want us to find how democracy can be quite entrenched.
Yeah, democracy has to be entrenched.
Quite recently, Virginia Palmer, the U.S. ambassador to Ghana, mentioned, and also let me say the U.S. government issued some form of warning that anybody that is seen or identified to, in a way, cause any form of mayhem during the elections would be denied. They would use tools such as visa granting and withdrawals of visa. Many people have said that that is not a positive threat, and that's not the best way to want to encourage people to not to be undemocratic. Would you find a space in this view of yours where what she said or what the U.S. government is saying, would you find a space to put this concern in there?
Yeah. What's called? Absolutely, because they also have their geopolitical agenda. Mm. And their geopolitical agenda, that's the Western geopolitical agenda, at the top of it is to promote good governance, promote a system that will guarantee the rule of law. So that if any individual in a country like Ghana, a country where they hold us the poster boy of democracy in Africa. People, individuals, want to use the little influence they have to disrupt that our democratic effort. You understand? Well, as a whose consequence, as a consequence of our losing our democracy, is really there. Because if you think about, or if you analyze our democracy or constitutional democracy, as the only way in which you can guarantee the rule of law, and a guarantee of the rule of law is the only way in which our inalienable rights to life, to liberties, and to pursue our happiness can be guaranteed. I understand why the U.S. would want to use soft power.
But Andrew, as a country, we champion separation of powers very much. And many people have actually questioned, where is the rule of law if we champion separation of powers very much? It looks like there is some form, we're hoping to have some form of equilibrium. Do you think that we can have successful separation of powers, as John Locke would want it to be, and then we can also have proper rule of law, you know, coexisting in a country such as Ghana?
See, they can't, you can't separate them, because the rule of law, as Lim put it, is the goal. Now, is the goal. And the tools which will aid you to achieve that rule of law, one, first of all, is to provide a government, or to create a government system, which is what we will call constitutionalism. That's unlimited, yes, the powers of government. Because you want to create a situation where nobody can have absolute powers. Now, there are also various tools in achieving that. One of them is the separation of powers. Because the whole idea is that we recognize that the powers of government are, let's say, the executive powers, the legislative, the judiciary. And feel that to better create a system where, like I'm saying, our right to life, our right to liberty, our right to pursue happiness can be guaranteed, then you need to separate those powers. But you see, and understand why you're asking these questions. But for me, the reason why the conversation of the rule of law has come to the fore is the gradual waning of our democratic values. You understand? And in my view, I dare say that it is happening in our political parties, because you need to stand there. As in, the political parties are there to entrench the democratic values. You understand? Rule of law. What are the values of the rule of law? One, if you believe in the rule of law, then you must abhor acts of arbitrariness. If you believe in the rule of law, you must understand that we are all equal before the law. If you believe in the rule of law, you must then appreciate that there must be some predictability of the law. Now, you take our political parties, and I'm not afraid to mention the NPP. You understand? When certain arguments they've advanced recently concerning the explanation of Article 39, where they said, where in spite of the clear terms of the article, their national, Executive Council reserves the right, in spite of what the article says, to take decisions contrary to that. That flies against the rule of law. It flies against the rule of law because then it impacts the certainty of the law, because then the law then doesn't become certain anymore. And also then enhances or encourages arbitrariness, because then at their whim, they can decide when to apply the Constitution or not. Now, haven't acted in a manner that flies against the fundamental tenets of the rule of law, I would have expected that there will be a major media barrage against the actions of a major political party in Ghana that undermines the concepts, the principles, the values of the rule of law.
But they went to the Apex Court, quite recent one. We'll still cite that political party where certainty and predictability of the law, as an individual, I like to read the Constitution and quite understand it in its very literal meaning. If I don't understand, then maybe I want to now go behind it and seek clarity, maybe go to the Supreme Court or anything. But the question of predictability and uncertainty, what do you want us to do? Would you want the law to be predictable or certain?
So the law, if where the law is certain, then it will be predictable. Okay. You understand? As in where the law, because the law shouldn't be shrouded in obscurity. We'll be a danger, a liberty, where if what the law is a secret, you understand, or it's something that is known to just a few. For us to create that system where our right to life, our right to our liberties, our right to pursue our own happiness can be guaranteed, because we should understand that these rights were not granted to us by any law. You understand? These rights, and that's why we use the word inalienable and inviolable.
Right.
That's what essentially saying, that is nature itself that granted us those rights. And all the Constitution does is to create a system that guarantees us those rights. So immediately, you cannot predict the law, or the law becomes uncertain. then you are, then there's something fundamentally wrong with the system you've created that ought to guarantee the rule of law.
But if it's certain, then what would be the role of the Supreme Court? I'm sure we're actually veering off, but let me, bringing you back again, ECOWAS, African Union, do they have any role to play at all in this concern that if we're not careful and if we don't look very much, our democracy will be depleted?
They have a fundamental role to play. Indeed, I think one of the fundamental purposes of why these blocks were forged was to protect the interests of Africa.
Many people have asked, but is international law law? Because it seems as though when it happens over there, how it's implemented here, and especially even in Ghana, if a law is quite international, it doesn't take effect automatically in Ghana. It has to go through us adopting it before it becomes law in Ghana. Would you think that we're shielded at least, knowing that certain things will not reach us? We'll have a wake-up call by the time we're going to Parliament to have them agree on this international law that may affect us?
In fact, it depends on how you see law. If you see law as, let's say, someone like the natural law school people see it, let's say like Aristotle see it as reason, free from passion. And then if you see it as a weapon, as in to guarantee as of the rule of law, then if the sub-region do not use the tools, well, then you see the law as a tool to take you to a certain end. And if the international body do not come together, you understand, with the focus of protecting the democracy we have. And for me, it is not negotiable because of the purpose of the democracy.
Right.
Because that's the only way we can guarantee the rule of law. And having a system that is governed under the rule of law is the only way in which our rights, our inalienable rights, can be guaranteed. Then as a matter of agency, if they're not doing their work well, then they need to set up.
All these blocks.
Yeah, they need to.
The AU and all of that, right.
Because they are there to protect our interest. And central to our interest is the protection of our rights. Yes, and so that if there is an outside threat, an external threat, yes, and whose focus, whose geopolitics, you understand, is to challenge under bloc, whose core value is to promote good governance, and they don't mind attacking good governance, attacking the rule of law to get their end, then it behoves on these regional blocs to come together to find a way, yes, and to find a way of insulating us against these very subtle and quiet attacks, propaganda, misinformation, and all. Because that's the only way. Because when it comes to issues that borders on our liberties, we shouldn't, as in there should be any room for negotiation.
Thank you so much, Mr. Andrew Afiadonko, for joining us. And then I recommend that you take a read of that epistle on My Joy Online. But let's take you on this one. DW, as fears of hybrid warfare are rising in Europe after two undersea cables in the Baltic Sea were damaged. One of them runs between Finland and Germany and is on a line cable between the Nordic country and Central Europe. Joining us with more is our DW correspondent, Chiponda Chimbelu in Berlin. Chiponda, thank you for joining us. So what do we know so far?
So what we know so far is the 1,200-kilometer undersea communications cable connecting the Finnish capital Helsinki to the German port of Rostock was severed early Monday morning. And prior to that, on Sunday, another communications cable was damaged between Sweden and Lithuania. Now, a Chinese flagged ship traveling from Russia is suspected to have caused both incidents. And this is not the first time that a Chinese ship has damaged cables in the Baltic Sea. The German Defense Minister Boris Pistorius said nobody believes that these cables were accidentally severed. And he said that this could be part of a hybrid operation while not naming any potential suspects. Now, Pistorius echoed the sentiments of the foreign ministers of both Germany and Finland, Annalena Baerbock and Elina Valtonen. On Monday, they issued a joint statement in which they said the incident could be part of Russia's hybrid warfare.
And how secure is the Baltic Sea then?
Well, there are fears of security around the Baltic Sea, and this is, of course, not the first time that sabotage is suspected there. There's been incidents involving infrastructure there last year and, of course, in 2022 with the explosion of the Nord Stream pipeline. And while that is still being investigated by German authorities, there have been many conspiracy theories around that event, with a lot of speculation about who was behind it, from Russia to Ukraine and even the United States government. Now, after the explosion, NATO and its allies have stepped up their patrols in the Baltic Sea. So the recent cable cuts may, of course, raise questions about whether enough is being done.
And what are European countries doing to protect critical infrastructure then?
That is, of course, an ongoing challenge. And if we look at the Baltic Sea, there are hundreds of kilometers of critical infrastructure, including for energy, so gas pipelines, for instance, and then also communication cables. And there are plans for offshore wind farms there. Now, securing every part of the Baltic Sea will remain an ongoing challenge. So European countries need to work together. Now, the fact that Finland and Sweden are now members of NATO improves security around the Baltic Sea. But of course, it is an international body of water and it isn't under NATO control. Russia has ports in Kaliningrad and St. Petersburg. So Russian ships are going to be using the Baltic Sea just as much as other ships like Chinese ones heading to Russia.
Thank you so much, Chiponda. Now let's go for a quick break. We'll be back shortly. Welcome back to The Pulse. Now the Catholic Church has announced the rejection of donations from proceeds of illegal mining activities. This is part of the sanctions adopted at the plenary assembly of the Catholic Bishops' Conference to deal with church members involved in the illegality. Now, President of the Bishop Conference, Most Reverend Matthew Kwesi Jemfi, says the church is ready to further tighten sanctions to include the refusal of communion to persons deemed culpable. Nana Yao Jemfi has more in the following report.
This year's annual plenary assembly of the Catholic Bishops' Conference was held in Obuasi, where the devastating effects of illegal mining is visible. To appreciate the devastation caused by the menace, the bishops made visits to the Jimmy River and some communities negatively affected by the illegal mining. At the opening of the conference, Bishop of Obuasi Diocese, Most Reverend John Yao Afuakwa, highlighted the spate of damage in areas within the church's reach.
All parishes and quasar parishes with their respective stations are numbered 425. Out of this number, 214 stations are into galamsey activities. The two deaneries in Obuasi Township, Obuasi and Tutika, have as many as 67 stations actively involved in galamsey.
The week-long plenary assembly spent some time discussing illegal mining and steps to fight the menace, though there is a push for government to strengthen its fight against the illegality. There are sets of sanctions adopted by the Catholic Church to keep members in check. President of Bishops' Conference, Most Reverend Matthew Kwesi Jemfi, explains.
We will not accept any donations that are the fruit of illegal mining. The sanctions will be tightening further, even to the extent that if you plainly, openly engage in galamsey, after a series of advice, and you persist in that dangerous activity, we may even refuse you Holy Communion. So it's something that is ongoing. It's not that we just exert it. There will be series of warning. Stop that. Stop that. But certainly, if you bring in money from galamsey, we do not consider that the Lord will not accept such a gift. We will refuse it immediately. You will be warned. And if you persist in it, then other sanctions will come.
Meanwhile, the conference believes members of the public have roles to play in halting the illegality. Most Reverend Jemfi believes it is about time communities restrain illegal miners from polluting water bodies.
The people should take it into their hands to protect their land and should not allow somebody from somewhere to come and destroy their water. Look, this whole thing that we are talking about the government do this, government do this, government do this. Is it the government who is polluting the water? It is even some of us in the local communities who are doing this galamsey. Then we say the government should come and save us from ourselves. No.
For Joy News, Nanaya Ojima reporting.
That'll be all for the polls today. For more news, do log on to myjoyonline.com. Today, as NDC is training thugs to disrupt December elections, NPP alleges this happened at the conference today that was held by the NPP. On myjoyonline, you'll find details.